Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. I'm David Reed. This is Marek Larwood.
Hello, film likers.
Well done, Marek. And we've got a guest this week. It's only Mr. Tom Bell.
Hello, Internet.
Hello, Tom Bell.
Thank you for having me.
Friend of the show. Friend of the show, Tom Bell. You've come on before, haven't you? Back in the old Absolute days.
Yeah, long time ago. It was great. And they've been calling for me again. It's
finally picking up the phone.
It seems like it's the first time that anyone's spoken to you since you did the last podcast. Imagine that.
I don't have to imagine it. Thank you.
That's what's happened.
It's been a while.
You
brought in Flash Gordon for us.
Vocabulary is coming back to me slowly.
I did bring in Flash Gordon. And that wonderful mask. Tom brought in a visual cue for us all to describe to our listeners.
I've been to a Flash Gordon party.
What was the mask? Was it...
It was Cletus?
Clitus.
Oh, the actual golden face guy.
Yeah.
Somebody had made it.
The sort of the high camp Darth Vader ripoff.
Yeah, he's amazing.
He's great.
Because when he fancies the princess, you know, he's evil, but he's, you know, got a heart.
The boring one, the Flash Gordon's princess. What's her name?
Dale Arden.
My first crush, I think I might have said before, was the... Ornella Muti plays the Russian prince, whatever her name is.
We were all.
She's the princess
that.
Of Mongo.
Oh, yeah, she's incredible. This girl's really turning me on, says Flash.
Is it true?
And all of us.
That they redubbed all of his lines because he was so bad.
Oh, no, I've heard that.
I've heard they redubbed a load of his lines.
Flash's lines?
Yeah.
But they're still so bad. Awful.
That's his voice, though.
It can't. I've heard that, and I think it can't be redubbed because the redubbed person was.
Bad, yeah. Maybe they wanted to redub.
Yeah.
Redubbing is such a weird thing, isn't it? I mean, it's been talked to about a lot, but most recent one is Tom Hardy's portrayal of Bane in Dark Knight Rises, where he had to redub the entire film. And his voice is so disconnected from the action in that movie. It's a very odd thing.
I've got a problem with evil villains wearing masks in... Like the William Dafoe Green Goblin.
Yeah,
was
it kills it, doesn't it? It kills any menace he might have. Yeah. Although it works with Darth Vader.
And
so.
Clitus, of course, from Flash Gordon.
Of course, he's classic villain.
They're great masks, though. But they're not really... But Darth Vader works. It does work with Darth Vader. It's odd, isn't it?
There's brooding menace. It's weird that the Green Goblin is all kind of, you know, arms waving and flying about the place. Yeah. And that doesn't have menace attached
there
to it.
There was no need to... do with the Green Goblin because Willem Dafoe's face painted green should have been that's goblinly enough anyway isn't
it? Well, V for Vendetta's a funny one as well because you never see his face but
at any point. I've talked about it many times but I always think his voice sounds like Rowan Atkinson so I can't quite take it seriously.
Okay.
No, the mask thing is odd. I wonder if it's what. Well, I guess it's a skill in itself. You can't just stick a mask on anybody and it all work. Like
it's a classic drama school thing, isn't it? Put a mask on and you know,
and then make it work.
Yeah, but
oh, Clitus, I'm bored. That's one of the lines.
Only a plaything.
Yeah. But we're not here to talk about Flash Gordon.
No, we've asked Tom to bring in a movie to talk about, and the movie you picked, Tom, was.
No one cared who I was before I wore the mask.
It's a fun voice to do, though, isn't it?
What, it's Bane, isn't
Gotham
it?
Gotham Shooter!
I find myself doing it a lot.
Me too. I fancied doing bulking up for the part and doing a sort of lounge singer routine as Bane, but it would have taken a lot of work, including learning to play the piano, so I decided not to do it in the end.
Yeah.
But I was born in the dark! It's like he's really struggling to have a poo. What a beautiful singing voice!
It's a bit Sean Connery, but for a kazoo.
For a kazoo?
That's great. I found myself doing it a lot afterwards.
Then you have my permission today.
Yeah, we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about this film. What film is it?
Do that to my washing up. Finish a bowl.
You have my permission to dry.
What? We're going to
talk about one of my favourite sci-fi apocalypse films, Children of Men.
Children of Men.
Now Oscar award-winning
director Alfonso Cuarón.
Can you tell us briefly a synopsis of what, without big spoilers, but what the film is, people haven't watched it before?
So it's the near future, it's 2027 or something like that, you know, but people have stopped having children. Everyone in the world has become infertile for a... never explained why. And so panic has taken over. So you start off, you're following Clive Owen, who is sort of a washed-up drunk. He used to be a sort of activist, and he's in Britain, but there's an explosion, and it's great.
He works for like an energy company, doesn't he? Works in a terrible job.
So, but sort of in the background of it, you get
the anarchy that ensues when there is no future to invest in.
So everyone's kind of lost hope.
Yeah,
but he's sort of given up, and the world seems to have given up. But they found one girl who is pregnant. And so
she becomes Hope.
His sort of ex-lover or wife or whatever, Julianne Moore, lists his help to get this girl to a boat
called Tomorrow.
Yeah, which is suggested. There's the Azores in the Pacific. There's still hope.
The scientists who can then study her and find out how they can cure this thing. So, but it's an odyssey of sorts, isn't it? I mean, it's him and this girl for a lot of it, and just trying to dodge the dangers and pitfalls of humanity breaking down.
So what?
To get, you know, it's that sort of thing. Is to get where they need to be. They've got to. It's going to get worse before it gets better.
So who are all the terrorists in this problem? With all the other economies have collapsed, aren't they? But London's one of the few places where everything's still okay. There's the problem with immigration and
there's huge sort of internment camps for immigrants trying to get into Britain because everywhere else, lots of other places are far worse. I mean, it's...
Which is very believable, and you know it.
That's and there's
part sort of the beauty of it. And they don't dwell on that, but the camera passes along those shots of these people behind bars.
Oh, they paint an incredible picture of the landscape and just how bleak but real it is. I mean, the cast... We should talk about as well, because the cast is incredible in this film, isn't it? I mean, Clive Owen is in your lead, and I've sort of been sort of meh about him in lots of other things, but in this he's spot on. But Julianne Moore, we've mentioned already, is his ex-wife. Michael Caine is brilliant in it as a old stoner who's sort of possibly the most keeping his head together of everybody. Actually, Chiwetel Ejiofor is a resistance fighter with Julianne Moore in it. Peter Mullen, who is the Scottish policeman who works in the internment camp, is brilliant. I think he you may know him from Trainspotting or Tyrannosaur or whatever, but he's always great. But no, it's a properly good film.
The young girl is very good as well.
Yes,
and then there's the kind of the midwife kind of character as well.
Mm.
Why do you like it then?
I'm a big sci-fi nerd anyway, but I also love apocalypse fiction and stuff. I like things where portrayals of how the world would be. I think it's very realistic of what would happen with just a small thing like that. You know,
it's a bit like Threads, actually.
Yeah, there's a lot of that sort of stuff. But also, I went along because I was like, I saw it twice at the cinema because I was just it really. I mean, visually, it's incredible.
Yeah.
And very inventive, and I don't know enough about all the camera. I was sort of googling it last night, and there's lots of opinions of, was it all one take stuff? There's amazing tracking shots,
incredible, especially towards the end with the SWAT team descending on a derelict building, and then being inside and trying to escape, and that is all in one shot, seemingly. I mean, I don't know, but I mean,
you definitely get that impression
just from watching Gravity. We can Alfonso Cuarón is, you know, note perfect on combining shots so that they become one continuous take. Mm. You know, he's incredible.
And with that, you do feel like you're being dragged along with it.
Yes.
So, you know, characters you've been seeing all the film suddenly are dragged off a bus and you never see them again, and the camera just keeps going, and you want to look back and go, what the hell's happened there? But it's too late.
Yeah,
people
just
get shot, and it doesn't matter. You just got to keep going. You just got to keep going. And, you know, Clive is a bit of a... And they just start killing off, all, you know, these characters. I mean, the famous scene, obviously, is like the car chase scene, which is amazing.
Phenomenal.
It switches from, you're like, oh yeah, I know where this film's going, and I can see what's happening here. And suddenly Julianne Moore is dead. Spoilers.
Yeah.
They shoot the policeman. It's the guys. And the other great scene is when they're trying to escape in the car, and it's rolling down the hill, and the, you know, the people are chasing after them. And my heart was in my mouth, going, oh my, go, go, go. You know, run.
It's an incredible car rig they've built as well, because the camera is panning back and forth, and you feel very intimate with these people in the car, but then stuff starts happening outside of it, and it's just keeps on rolling. It's brilliant. I think is.
I did. I, when I watched it, my experience was, I think it'd be cursed. I got it from Love Film, and I got a scratch DVD halfway through, and it wouldn't play like a whole. There's a big scratch.
No. Oh,
and then
God.
You send it back, and then a Love Film, for people listening, it's sort of getting outdated Love Film now. Sorry to change it, but
in America, to American listeners, Netflix does the same thing over there.
Oh, okay. You get sent DVDs, and then you send it back, and you don't get it for about 3 months. So you can't watch the start. So it was ruined for me just purely for that reason. But I started watching bits of it again. It does look, it's amazing.
Mm. It's I like how high film. The stakes are as well, but yeah, it's still a very small character.
And it's a beautiful idea. I mean, it's a very simple short story idea of if there isn't a next generation to put all of our hopes and dreams into getting it right this time, why would anyone bother being nice to each other? Why would they bother building anything? Why wouldn't they just take and take and take? And that's exactly what happened. It's a beautiful bit of sci-fi. But it's not... For anyone who sort of isn't a fan of sci-fi, it isn't overtly sci-fi like, you know, your Logan's Runs or your Blade Runners or anything. It doesn't feel like a sci-fi at all.
A bit like Hers, slightly, but more sci-fi than that, just a slight... Enough in the future to make a great social commentary on the present.
And there's little touches. There's little touches, but there's not a lot of technology sci-fi. Like, a little touch I love, and they never make loads of it, is the Quietus product that you see in the background of a lot of shots.
Yeah.
And this is actually a home euthanasia kit that is provided by the government for people because they can't cope with the just terminally sort of, ill or with anyone
just
who...
Just sort of suggest that actually it might be better if everybody...
Yeah, you'd really be doing society a favour if you just took yourself out of the equation. And it's
a good idea, which is a good... You have to say...
You wouldn't need to pay for an NHS if you just paid for a quietus for everybody, would you?
But there is something, from my years of doing crappy promotional work and handing out stuff free on the streets, I do believe that there's a very thin veneer of society out there. I remember we went out just giving away plastic bags with all ahead of us like a bottle of water on Oxford Street, and it was like a zombie apocalypse. People hurling their kids, give me that, oh well, that's free, isn't it? People, you know, there's just, you can imagine that if there was, like, you know, a plague and there was only enough medicine for a third of the people, it would just be like...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So
we're on a knife's edge.
Yeah.
I remember being...
And it does that very well.
Again, doing crappy promotional work for... Yeah. This was for a novel that a Silicon Valley billionaire had written, and he was promoting it sort of virally by us staging book bannings in the, you know, busy shopping streets. And, you know, we just... Rubbish job, awful. But we'd just go into, you know, like the centre of Birmingham or whatever and start shouting about how this book should be banned. And people would come up to us going, you know, how dare you? You know, we fought the World War to stop this sort of stuff. How dare you think you can ban a book? And literally it would only take 5-10 minutes of us talking to them in character for them to walk away going, well, good luck with that. Yeah, no, I wish you all the best.
Yeah, yeah.
They can be swayed so easily. And it was frightening, because I wasn't even really trying. I hadn't done my homework. I was just being sort of serious about it.
So that goes back to that compliance thing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
The film Compliance talked about.
No, which is fascinating. Phenomenal film, but terrifying film, like really harrowing because it is so closely based on real events. Thoroughly recommend it. I've said it many times. Compliance is good. But going back to Children of Men, I think it really should be considered a classic.
We all really like it.
Was it well received, very well heralded,
was it?
No, it wasn't. It sort of came and went, and it sort of just done decent business ticking along, I think.
It did better here, I think, than the US, because it's also set in the UK.
Yeah, yeah.
And
so I wonder if in his Oscar will get, you know, shed a bit more light, spotlight on.
Well, I mean, it's Alfonso Cuarón, obviously.
And, I hadn't really heard of him before Gravity. And he's
also Chiwetel Ejiofor from 12 Years a Slave, so it combines the last week's Oscars quite nicely. It's definitely worth a watch.
I like the sci-fi stuff. I mean, I've just started watching Blake 7 for the first time.
I've never seen it. Similar
sort of effects.
It's all on YouTube. The effects are so bad, but the plot is incredible. It's so skillfully written, you can forgive. And because it's set in the future, you can get away with it being quite odd. And even the fact it's aged, because it's aged and they're wearing sort of 70s-ish stuff.
Yeah.
Now it seems like this sort of dystopian possibility that they could be.
I love the idea of throwing in one fictitious element into what is basically a real world and then just see what the consequences are, you know, the basis of true sci-fi. I thought the Justin Timberlake film In Time had real potential to do exactly that, and it fails because it tries to it tries something and doesn't know what to do with it, so it turns it into another genre for a bit and then doesn't know what to do with that, so it does something else, and it's just not had a clever enough person at the helm, sadly. But when you get such a great little concept about, well, if that were different, would everything be quite so great? You know. So
how many toms do you give it out of 10? 10 toms?
I'm going to give it... No, I'll give it 9 toms. Because, you know, you can always do better, can't you?
That's true.
There's always hope. There's always hope for a better film.
There's always hope.
There's always the boat tomorrow to catch, isn't there?
Yeah. I made somebody watch it recently, and the film ends, the boat put, you know, and they went, oh, don't end there! I love those films. No, not now!
Oh. Films do often end in the wrong place, I find.
Yeah.
The ones where, as soon as the happy beat happens, you get a tracking shot away and roll credits, those are the ones I like. The ones that feel the need to go back to the house and everyone talk about how they're all fine now and how happy they are, rubbish.
Rubbish. Maybe that's not a Hollywood enough ending. Maybe that's another reason it didn't.
Filmmakers, you've listened to this. A lot of the best directors listen to this podcast.
Yeah, all of them.
All of the best.
Eight.
Alfonso will be delighted we've been name checking him.
Oh, he emails all the time. We refuse to read them out of courtesy.
Yeah, fair.
We don't want to brag, you know.
But Mark, you know filmmaking pretty well.
What do you mean by that?
I'm just trying to help. I stopped your link and I'm trying to bridge back.
Oh, I was going to talk about, so if we talked about Children of Men, this week, along similar sort of lines, I have been watching, I'll tell you the story of how I came to watch my films this week. I went to this camera convention, which is for all the latest sort of camera making equipment and filmmaking equipment in London. And lots of geeks going and weirdos, me included. Well, yeah. And my friend Paul Allen, who made a film called Big Frontline Spacing, he's been on the show. I went on with him and his DOP, who's working on lots of sort of proper Hollywood films based in the UK now. We're talking to them, and they said the problem now is really hard. I was talking to lots of filmmakers in the pub afterwards, always producers and directors, saying it's really impossible to get funding, how you can't make anything. It's the same sort of experience you have from our comedy world and TV world in film. And I think the best thing to do for a low budget thing is to set it in one space. So you can light that space.
Yeah.
You've got, set it in a studio. Or
set it indoors as well. So indoors. It's a controlled environment. So you're not worrying about overtime if the weather's not right. Yeah.
So it's how you can shoot a film in a short space of time, i.e. 2 weeks, which is what he did with his Big Fat Large Spacing film. Just at
in a
two, two student locations, shot over 2 weeks, the whole film, because that's how much they can afford to pay the crew for that amount of
time. Well, Tom Bell and I did a low-budget film recently, didn't we? We in a film that will come out eventually. I assume the title will be the same as it was on the script.
Yeah, they were unsure about the title.
They were, but it was called Nothing Like This. But Ray Panfaki, who's from movies and EastEnders and stuff, but I think he was in something called City Rats, and he did another called Convenience.
Oh, I did, which I can talk about as well, because it was a similar one location kind of thing. But yeah, it's finding ways, isn't it? But it's making it work for you. So I did this film called Convenience with Ray.
Yeah.
And which then ended up doing this one with David.
Is it out, Convenience? Is it?
Yeah, it's done a few festivals, and it's going to get more release. It's going to get a bigger release soon. But it's these two guys. This guy owes these Russian mobs money, so they decide to go rob a petrol station. But it's on a time lock. They have to wait till 6 a.m. But they need the money that badly. They're like, "Well, we've already come and we've already tied everybody up. Let's just wait till 6 a.m. So they start just working a late night shift in there.
In the
garage. And like one of the jokes in the trailer is, when it looks suspicious, they went, "What, two Asians working in a garage? I think we'll be all right."
Yeah.
And then so that's a platform for Vicky McClure's in it as well.
She's fantastic.
Yeah. And
I'm watching Line of Duty at the moment. She's brilliant.
I haven't seen it. But so it was pretty much all shot in this garage in Neath, which I'm sure helped them. You know, if you can pitch it and go, "We only had to shoot in one place." Okay, I'm still listening.
Well, in TV, it's called a bottle episode, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where you film
Inside Number 9 is a perfect example. Yes. They just sit it all in a cupboard, pretty much in a room in a cupboard.
The first episode, yeah. And then, but they're all just in a flat. They're all or a house or whatever. But I mean, there's no other term that I know of in films either. They're just called bottle episodes as well. But it becomes an exercise in writing.
Yeah.
In just pure character and drama, because you can't suddenly go on a car chase or abseil down a building because you don't know what else to do.
And there, quite a lot of them are, we talked about briefly before, like sort of comedy or more horror. It's almost like you're revealing, because you're stuck in one place with these characters. It's almost like that slow reveal.
Yes.
And the two films I watched, so first of all, so the film's called Convenience, you did.
Yeah.
And that's
definitely worth checking out.
Look out for that.
I'm not sure when it's going to be on Cardiff soon, and then getting a nationwide sort of small release, I think.
Well, let's know about that.
We'll do.
The films I watched is quite an old film called, I recommended these films, Cube, which was out in 1997.
Brilliant film.
And Exam, which was in a British film, which has been out about two, three years ago, and that's on Netflix.
I've talked about Exam before briefly, but
so Cube is it's these people wake up inside this box room, and there are exits out to different boxes.
It's like they're inside a cube, and each face has an exit to another cube. And what's genius about the film, and how the writer should be applauded, is they have set it in a single cube, but by relighting it, it becomes a different cube. It becomes an infinite number of cubes. And so they actually can create a sort of dungeon explorer, is basically what it is.
With the same location.
But they've only got one set.
Mm.
Brilliant. I mean, it's an absolute classic of the bottle episode genre, really.
But thinking outside the, cube.
Yep.
Very, very inventive, rather than just being stuck in one room, just using your imagination, like you said.
Yes.
But yeah, it's making, positive of only having this space, which is great.
I'm trying to think. Exam is a fun one. I don't think it's a classic, but it is a good one.
Exam is basically, there's eight candidates who have to apply for this job. And they get given a paper with their candidate number on it, and they've got to work out what the question is they have to
answer.
Yeah,
they get given the rules by a man at the beginning, and then the door is locked and there's a security guard with a gun standing by the door, and only one person will be given this incredibly high-powered job, whatever it is, and they all turn their exam papers over and it's completely blank. And it becomes a sort of initiative test on all of them, of questioning everything they have been told and questioning what they assume to be true but might not be. And it's great fun. And also, as with nearly all bottle episodes, the true identities of the people who share this space with them come into question.
So like 12 Angry Men almost becomes that, because it's sort of that same model where you gradually reveal, but it's about yourself, I suppose. I don't know if that's right or not.
I'm trying to think of some others that are excellent. Saw, the first Saw film, is basically a bottle episode. They cut, I think there's some stuff, I might be misremembering, but there's some stuff outside. It's sort of a B-arc going on out in the real world, but it's basically set in a bathroom. And, you know, that managed to create an enormous, you know, bloated franchise. But, you know, off the back of one bottle episode. They can do it if it's sort of interesting enough. Bound is another one, isn't it, that the Wachowskis did, and to prove they could make a film, and they got The Matrix off the back of it.
In a different sort of way, Rear Window is kind of like that.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. A sort of slightly bigger bottle.
Yeah.
But pretty much it's his flat and the view from the flat, isn't it? That's the entire film.
And it's Buried, the one with Ryan Reynolds,
which I thought it was almost great. I thought it had some script issues in that I thought it got bored with itself to try too many things.
I wonder if you get really claustrophobic if you watch the back to, I found it weird watching these two back to back.
Oh, really?
If you watch these bottle episodes back to back, you go crazy, wouldn't you?
Well, there's very rarely natural light in them, is there?
Yeah.
It's all very harsh light.
Of course, all these recordings are bottle episodes.
They are. We never leave.
Nope.
We always question each other's true identity.
And one of us is a murderer.
Yeah. And it's probably the person you least expect.
So it's you.
Well, it's Buddy. Buddy the dog.
But you do change the lighting quite often.
All the time. Really, it's becoming a bit of a hassle. I don't think it's coming across.
But it's true. But the other thing you get, I get a lot in, you know, free locations like woods. You know, there's a lot of British horror end up in the woods.
Yeah.
Because that's, you know...
Easy but as soon as you shoot outside, though, you do have the whole... sunlight and clouds and noise and everything. Dog Soldiers is a bottle episode, pretty much. There's an intro sequence in the woods, and then the rest is in a cottage.
Mm.
The entire film. Brilliant.
Or The Descent, I guess, in a similar...
Yeah, yeah.
You know, all films are. It turns out all films are.
Well, most cheap films are, yeah.
Well, my friend Paul, sorry, was talking, because he goes up to lots of film festivals and talks to all these film geeks. So there's a film called Dead End, which is people get lost on the road. And what they do, I haven't seen it myself, so we'll look out for Dead End. They just had 400 metres of a straight road.
Yeah.
And they filmed all going back and down, up, down that road. So you had a separate location. There's no cocking about that. It's just that, what they're going to use. And the whole film's just...
Right around it.
Yeah. It does give you... I mean, I think people get more creative when they're constrained sometimes.
Definitely. Evil Dead. You know, creating the cabin in the woods genre. Of just like, there is a cabin. If we go, we can't go too far into the woods because it's too dark. Well, basically, we don't want to have to light the woods. So stay in this cabin.
Put them in a box, put masks on everybody, you've got the ultimate film.
Mm.
You do, if you know.
Too many constraints.
Green Goblin.
Don't film it.
Fightus and Darth Vader
buried,
are in a cabin in the woods.
In a cabin, yeah.
Buried must be the smallest in terms of space. I would like to see a list of films in terms of the smallest location, the least amount of location you... They must be buried, right?
Yeah, Ryan Reynolds has quite broad shoulders, so you could probably... Someone could probably make a smaller one.
Yeah.
What about things like The Borrowers or something like that? Where you could get even smaller.
You were talking about...
I'm talking
Devil, wasn't it? Or set in a lift.
I mean,
lift.
Bug's Life is all set in an ant colony. That's tiny.
I've seen Devil set in a lift, which is quite an odd film.
That's M. Night Shyamalan, isn't it?
Feels like an M. Night Shyamalan
film. It is
film.
His, yeah. It's towards the end of his downward spiral, that film. Is it any good?
Inner Space is all set
I watched it at the cinema and I quite enjoyed
Inner Space is set in a rectum.
Well, it's just getting ridiculous now, isn't it?
I think what we've discovered is we're racking up...
Bosso episodes, not Bomo episodes.
We filmed an episode in Ryan Reynolds in a coffin.
Yeah.
That would be good.
Yeah.
What a sort of infinite regression sequel. So the first one is Ryan Reynolds in a box. The sequel is set inside his body in the box.
Yeah.
It would be like A Bug's Life inside Ryan Reynolds. It goes dark and it's hot and they didn't realize what's happened to the outer world.
Yep. Wow.
But that must have happened, theoretically, to the bacteria living in Ryan Reynolds' bumhole.
Definitely. As clean as Ryan you may be, there will be some there.
And they must have thought, what's happened here? We're in our environment's completely changed.
We'd better go on an adventure and question the identity of all of the bacteria that we thought we knew.
In a way, the bacteria were just as trapped as him.
Yes.
Wow.
I think
Ryan, email us in what you think about that idea.
This might have seemed like a quite sort of meandering...
Well, I think episode, what we've discovered is actually there
our endpoint has been amazing.
It's been amazing. There are far more bottle episodes than perhaps we thought there were. You know, I mean, people have been very creative with them. I mean, I've always fancied writing one because it is just that exercise in you can't just throw money at it.
What is interesting is that a lot of them are 1 hour 30 minutes on the dot, including credits. Yeah. You don't see a 2 hour one that they just, because it's almost, was it 120? It's got to be over 80 minutes to be a feature, some sort of.
Oh, really?
I don't know what it is, but.
I assume the cinemas have rules about how long they want them to be.
Probably.
You know.
I think there's some. I've not seen one stretch like the Cube, I think The Devil, and also Buried, all quite short films.
Yeah.
I don't know if that means anything to anyone, probably not.
You like the numbers, though, don't you?
I like statistics. Make me feel as if there's some sort of order in this crazy world.
And that's what films are about, ultimately, isn't it? Statistics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where it comes from.
Ordering chaos into convenient 90-minute narratives to make it feel like it should make sense.
Have you seen anything else you've liked recently, Tom, at the cinema that you want to recommend, or do you want to plug anything at all? Or?
I can't think. What would I plug?
But Convenience is the film you made, and you also made another film, another short film.
Yeah, I've actually had a little run of a couple of films. I've done a couple of short films. We did the Convenience, I play a stoner in that with Tony Portway. Mm-hmm. I don't know when that's coming. Check out Convenience. Check out my website, by all means, tombell.org.
Tombell.org.
I'm doing Nightmare Live, which is a sort of like a bottle episode TV show Nightmare, wasn't it?
What is Nightmare Live? Can you explain to what that is?
Yeah, the old TV show, the incredible old TV show, Nightmare, where a kid would be blind in a helmet, going around a dungeon until inevitably they were killed, guided by three of their friends.
And staring into a treasure chest.
Yeah. Ooh, nasty. Where am I? I'm in a room. You know, it's that kind of stuff.
People do that?
Touring it. I'm the evil Lord Fear. We're doing... NightmareLive.com's got our dates up. We're doing... The Udderbelly, South Bank, but we're also going to like Derby and Salford and
this summer
Milton Keynes from June onwards. So you got plenty of time.
It's Nightmare with a K, isn't it?
It's Nightmare with a K.
It's a pun. It's so if you're looking for Nightmare Live, that would be something quite.
That's kind of like a bottle episode because we have to keep recreating. We've only got a stage space.
I suppose all theatre is a bottle episode, isn't it?
Yeah, it turns out this episode was completely pointless.
And in the end, nothing.
So if you send us those things, we'll put what Convenience when it comes out on the website and tell you about Nightmare Live if you fancy going on and being in a dungeon. Sex dungeon.
It's quite like a sex dungeon.
It's a bit like Saw.
I also did a cameo in The Secret Service, excitingly, which is the new one from the Kick-Ass team.
Oh really?
It may yet hit the cutting room floor, so I'm just sort of crossing my fingers for that. That's the opposite of a bottle episode. They had some money for that one.
Well, we'll cut that bit out of the podcast, and unless you get it, then we'll put it back in later on.
Okay, yeah.
So it seemed relevant.
Cool. Well, thank you for joining us, Tom Bell.
Great. And we put our clothes back on now, or what's the plan?
Not for a while.
In a bit. Yeah. If you'd like to write in to us, then please do. Email us at dearfilmfandango@gmail.com or simply go on our Facebook page /filmfandango or tweet us at filmfandango. And... as I say, every week we do this all for free. If you would like... Muggins.
What?
Yeah.
You guys deserve lots of money for this.
We do. So if you'd like to, you know, contribute towards the enjoyment you have got from this free product, then please go to filmfandango.co.uk and follow the link from there.
I'm doing that now.
Thanks, Tom Bell. And everyone who has already, thank you very much. We'll be back next week.
Keep
watching the films.
Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.